This is a Pinball News production.
Thank you, Dave. Welcome. There's one thing I just have to say. I hope everybody realizes what exciting times these are for pinball. I mean, we got so many new games, and we haven't had this in a long time. I'm very excited about what's going on in the vendor hall out there and so on. So, very great. So, thank you. First of all, congratulations to Mike and Rob for 30 years of Pinball Magazines. Could you give me the next slide, please? 30 years. I've only been here 3 times, and I'm honored to be here and doing a seminar. So, hope you will like what I have to tell. My name is Jonathan Yosen. I'm the editor of Pinball Magazine. Here's my contact details and the website. I'm going to briefly be talking, very briefly, about the history and the concept of the magazine, the first 3 issues, and no, the 3rd isn't out yet. You didn't miss anything. What I've been doing in the meantime, the pinball book by Santiago Chufo and other stuff, and then Paul is going to take over, and he's going to talk about Pavlov Pinball. Paul is a copy editor for Pinball Magazine. He's running his own website as well, which is why we are doing this together. So basically, 2006 to 2009, I was the editor of Spinner Magazine, which is a Dutch publication run by the Dutch Pinball Association. And at some point in time, Mr. Martin Ayup from Pinball News told me, if you would do this in English, it would be the best publication in the world. That sort of took some time to sink in, and then in 2011 I started thinking about maybe doing something again in publishing in print, and I started look at doing a book about designers and focus on their entire careers. And when I started working on the first designer, which was Roger Sharp, it took so long to get it done, I figured if I have 10 designers in the same book, it will take like 10 years, and by the time the book is done, well, it's not a nice thing to say, but some of them might not no longer be here. So I figured I better do it as a magazine so that I can publish it immediately when I'm done with it. And basically that's how Pinball Magazine became Pinball Magazine. Since I had the idea originally to do a book, I wanted it to look like a book. Next, please. So it sort of became this glossy magazine idea, where each cover story would focus on a pinball industry veteran, with in-depth articles and the whole large photos, which was something that I was really missing in other printed pinball publications. And side articles that will tie in with the cover story where possible. So I did two issues so far, and basically the magazine focuses on the people that make pinball happen or made pinball happen. It promotes pinball, which is obviously a goal, but it also helps other companies to promote their products and whatever they are doing to promote pinball or help you be able to play your game or whatever they do, either by have an article in the magazine or do advertisements. I mean, there's a lot of people who read the magazine. If you want to reach those, that's a way to reach them and get your product out there. But mainly the goal was I wanted to make a magazine that I would like to read, which I think is probably the best goal to do, because if I wouldn't like it, why would I do it? The positive side effect is what I've been told, that I, or we, and the other people involved in the magazine have been elevating pinball, or at least the way pinball print media have been evolving, to a higher level. I'm very happy that people think that way, so I can only say thank you if that's the case. Again, I'm just making the magazine I would like to read, and if people think that's better than what others are doing, I still respect other people for what they are doing, and I'm very happy that they do it, and I wish them the best of luck and success in everything. So, One way to do or to achieve the quality that I had in mind was, as I'm not a native English speaker, get people who are to make sure that it looks good. So we have Paul, and we also have Eric J. Koss, who is an editor of the Alameda Sun in California. They are my copy editors. They approve every copy before it goes to print or on the website. Especially Paul is also involved with the newsletters and everything that goes on the website. So thank you, Paul. contrary to other companies, I refuse to work with volunteers because volunteers usually tend to only do what they like to do. And at some point, there might be, or you may get at a point where it's no longer fun to do, but you still have to do it. So I rather have everybody paid in one way or another, because basically then it's easier to communicate, and you don't have to wait for someone to make time in for doing something that he doesn't get paid of, because basically they're not going to do that if they don't like to do it anymore. And give credit where credit is due. And then again, we can get to Martin Abe of Pinball Magazine, who I really have to thank for helping me announce the magazine when I had my plans, which got the first advertisers on board and allowed me to do the first magazine. And then everybody realized, oh, there's a new pinball publication. So, Martin, thank you very much. Next, please. So this is the first issue, the cover of the first issue, which is no longer for sale. It's completely sold out. Only the Pacific Pinball Museum has a few copies left. If you're in the USA, then you can contact them, and they will. They're more than happy to send it to you if you pay them, of course. For Europe, it doesn't work because the shipping to Europe is more expensive. So the magazine had 112 pages, a cover story on Roger Sharp, and a few side articles that tied in. IFPA, which is run by Josh's, by Roger's sons. We had an article on pinside.com, which after that really blew up, not due to the magazine, but still, they really, really became very, very popular. And the Pacific Pinball Museum. Here we have the second issue, which was published in June of last year. That was already thicker, 188 pages, more side articles, cover story on Dennis Nordman's career with a lot of help from Greg Ferris, for which I have to thank Greg. Thanks, Greg, and Dennis, by the way. We had more side articles like Pinball Arcade. Rob and Mike from Pinball Expo were in there. Dave Peterson, who is the investor at Stern, we did an interview with him, and a lot of other stuff. And this issue is still for sale, not here at Expo, but you can still order it on the Pinball Magazine website. So then we started working on issue three, or actually I started working on issue three prior, before doing issue two, because issue three was going to be about Python Angelo, who passed away in April of this year. Python invited me to his home twice. Door was always open, and I spent 14 days with him in total in 2013, recording over 50 hours of conversation, and I've been busy transcribing these 50 hours, and trust me, if you know Python a little bit, if you listen to Python talk for 10 minutes, that's already quite exhausting for your ears. Imagine listening to him for 50 hours, and then go and transcribe 50 hours of Python. Well, at some point, next please, I got at the point that where I would listen to 10 minutes of Python, I couldn't hear him for a week. And I really, he's a very creative guy, but he had his issues, so to say. In fact, everybody who helped me with the magazine in transcribing stuff, they quit. They said, I can no longer listen to this guy. Do it yourself, which is what I do. And So there's over 50 hours, there's phone calls, there's public seminars, and we all took that, it's all going to be in the magazine, or the best elements out of that. And I can briefly show you where we are now, and here we're going to speed this up. Okay, this is currently the table of contents that I have for the 50 hours of transcripts, and if we do the next, and the next, and the next, okay. So that's a 10-page table of contents in which I labeled every topic that we discussed. And Python basically discussed every topic like 10 times. So you got to sort the best quotes from him and group that all together with the topic that we were talking about and try to make sense out of it. And that's going to be a hell of a job for both me and for Paul. Paul didn't know that yet, but now you do. So, in the meantime, we've also been working on the artwork for the game or the images. Python had a lot of artwork himself. We will have a lot of original artwork, which, like the Pinbot backlash over here, doesn't have the Williams logo yet. That's his original painting that we took pictures of. That's the original storyboard for Pinbot. Obviously, the playfield in the traditional way that we do playfields in Pinball Magazine, page wide without the cabinet, and so you can just focus on the playfield. Next, please. Pinball Circus is going to be in there. He talked a lot about that. Again, you see how he cut out the playfield, so the focus is really to the playfield. Next. Flipper Football was one of his games, and I didn't put them all in there. Next. And I got a ton of stuff like this. I scanned basically every piece of paper I could find in Python's house. So this is these are drawings for a game called World of Clowns, which he apparently offered to Bally in 99, which is odd because then they were already doing Pinball 2000 at the time. But this was a traditional pinball game. And if you look very closely, you can't see it here, but I do have a sketch for the back glass, and that actually has alphanumeric displays, which is even another step back. There will be others talking about Python, and I have to do that because Python talks about everybody and not in the most positive way. And I believe that the only way to quote Python on that is to have everybody else have their say about Python as well. Plus, it helps you balance or bring balance to the magazine so you can decide for yourself which part of the story you think is true. With Python, not everything he said was true or made sense. So. This is a preview of the page that I already did with Chris Graner. That's a 2.5 page in total. But it's just a layout like you're used to from the magazine, and I got others as well. I just put this in there to show you, okay, we're working on stuff, and whatever is done, we're trying to get it going or do the layout and check it off the list, basically. There will be tie-in articles about Capcom Pinball. That's the plan. We have an interview with Tim Arnold of the Pinball Hall of Fame. New design talents will be in the magazine as well, because Python really believed that the future of pinball is with the kids of today, the Jerry Stellenbergs, and so these guys will be in there with an article. They can promote their games, so I'm helping them in a way as well, other than that it's very interesting content, I think. And hopefully the magazine will be available later this year. We have so much content, we might actually do a poll on the internet, either on Pinsight or on Facebook. We are considering to do an issue 3 and an issue, or 3A and 3B, because we got so much content. And if I do it like a book, it's going to be so heavy for overseas buyers that the postage is probably going to scare them away. So if you do it in two issues, then you got something to read, and 3 months later the next issue will be there, and that will continue where the other one stopped. So it could be like the Williams years and the Capcom years something like that. But we'll do a poll on that to see what people prefer. In the meantime, we're also publishing frequently other interviews with people from the industry, and these are usually available as free downloads on the Pinball Magazine website. So I can only say, visit the Pinball Magazine website for content in between issues. We had interviews with Jack from Jersey Jack, Keith Johnson, Dave Peterson again from Stern, who did an update on the interview of last year. George Gomez, which you see pictures here, and there will be others. Gary Stern is one of them. We already did that interview. Just have to find the time in between everything else to make it public and make it look good as well. There's more to come. And if you don't want to miss out on anything, subscribe to the Pinball Magazine newsletter to be informed. Then we did this book. This is a photo book by an Argentinian photographer called Santiago Chufo. We're going to skip through this very fast just to give you an idea. He did 60 copies in Argentina, and then I bought the rights to do it for the rest of the world because the book was not available due to import-export restrictions in Argentina. And basically, the book is out a couple of months now. It's for sale over here at the booth of Mike Pasek. Thank you, Mike, for being so helpful with that. Next, please. It's in three languages, and the book also has nine additional languages as supplements. So if you're from Spain or Belgium or whatever, there's probably a supplement in your language as well, so you can read the book in your language. But it's mainly photos anyway. So, next, please. So here's a couple of pictures by courtesy of, again, Martin Abe of Pinball News, who takes much better pictures than I do. So we're going to really skip fast through these so you get an idea. And if you're interested, again, see me or go to the stand of Mike Pasek and get the book over there. We have an offer. I think if you order it online right now, with the postage and stuff, it's like $65, but over here at the show you get it for $50 or $49.95, but nobody's going to care about that 5 cents. So, you can get it here and you can get a good deal on it. So if you're interested, please get yourself a copy later on. Next, please. Then other plans and activities, and then I'm going to give the mic to Paul. We did posters. They're actually out in the hallways, the big posters of Xenon and Gorgar and all that. We did those. Those are available in the web shop. Those are actually photos from the book of Santiago Chufo. We also have posters of the covers of the magazine. And we're working on ideas for, obviously, the next issues, people to interview. We might do a new set of postcards. We had originally a set of postcards that came with the book for the first 500 people that bought a book. I got the last sets here, and they go with the book while supply lasts if you buy it here, and else tough luck. But Marco Specialties has shown interest in a special set of postcards to carry, and we might do that, so you can order these exclusively at Marco Specialties. There's an idea to do is a book series on flyers, pinball flyers, probably grouped by company in chronological order. And we're just going to see if there's enough interest to do that, actually, because obviously a lot of flyers are available online and not everybody's willing to buy a book of that if they can find the stuff online anyway. But and, well, basically whatever will be next, we'll make sure that the quality will be there because that's what we really like to see ourselves. I'll be taking questions after Paul's presentation, so I'm giving the mic to Paul now. So thank you for so far.
Thank you, Jonathan. Good morning. I'm Paul Rubens, and I'm going to talk very briefly now about my newish pinball publication, Pavlov Pinball. Now, if you're a journalist, and my main job is a journalist, you always write best and you always enjoy, I think, writing most about things that you're passionate about. And I like writing about pinball, and I love pinball. Over the last couple of years, I've written a few articles. There's a couple there from the BBC. There's a slight problem, of course. Somewhere like the BBC, they say, well, you know, we're a very broad publication, and there's a limit to how much pinball. So basically, my editors come to me and said, enough already with the pinball stories. We can't do any more. We've done two, that's enough. So it struck me that if I want to write about some of the amazing stories and about some of the amazing things that are going on in pinball, I better perhaps start my own publication. So that's why I started Pavlov Pinball. A few people have asked me where the name comes from, and if you've seen the movie Special When Lit, it comes from a comment that Pat Lawler said something about hitting targets, getting rewards, and he said, this is Pavlov. And it's also a theme that Gary Stern has taken up as well, and he sometimes talks about Pavlovian pinball. I thought, fantastic, this is a great name for a publication. The best comment I've had about the logo, I think, came from Nate Shivers, who does the Coast to Coast pinball podcast. I don't know if anyone here's seen it. I'm sure they have or heard it. He's very prolific. He brings out a new podcast about every 10 minutes, as far as I can see. But he said, like the logo, but one piece of advice: don't put your tongue near a pot bumper. And I think that's probably some good advice there. So this is Pavlov Pinball, and as you can see, there's an article with George Gomez, various other things. Just as a show of hands, has anyone here actually been before to Pavlov Pinball? A couple of people. Well, that's good. You probably notice it's very pink, and that's deliberate. The colour scheme was chosen is basically reminiscent of cotton candy. And the thinking behind that is, to use a food analogy, if you want a big, substantial pinball meal, then pick up a copy of Pinball Magazine. But if you're after just a quick snack and you want to just have a little pinball fix, come to Pavlov Pinball. And the idea really is it's somewhere where you can feed your passion for pinball. That's what I'd like it to be. If you're not playing pinball, it's the evening, or you're at work and the boss isn't looking, you probably go to Pinside. You probably go to Martin's excellent pinball news, and I'd love it if people come here and just take a quick look at what's up that day. So just an example of the stories that I have on Pavlov Pinball. Now, this is a story about pinball in Iceland. Now, before I go on, I have no idea what this guy was thinking putting his pinball machine in a lake. It's probably not a good idea to mix electrical equipment and water, so please don't do that at home. But he is basically Iceland's only pinball repair guy. Now, to get some idea of what the pinball scene's like in Iceland, in the whole of Iceland, there's only 60 pinball machines. To put that in perspective, over there, I think in this hotel, there's probably about three times as many pinball machines as there are in the whole of Iceland. So he pretty much knows everyone. He repairs all the machines. And in a small community like that, if you want to have a game, you probably know, or you're probably related to somebody who's got the game you want. So it's a very nice pinball scene there, but it's also slightly sad because there are no new pinball machines coming into Iceland. There was a US Army base there, and that closed down about 15 years ago, and when that happened, they sold off all the pinball machines. Apparently they had about 60 pinball machines there. This guy bought about half of them. But the newest machine in the whole of Iceland is a Corvette, which I think is early 90s. So that means the people in Iceland, if they want to play pinball, they've never played a Medieval Madness, never played a Monster Bash. There's no Sterns, there's no Jersey Jack. So if there's anyone here from Stern or Jersey Jack and they fancy sending a free pinball machine to Iceland, I know that they'd be very grateful. That's the sort of stories that I run. I leave Jonathan and other places to do stories about the big designers and the big meaty stories. I do some of the more off-the-wall stuff. I think that's probably enough for me, so I'm going to call Jonathan back, and we'll take some questions. I'm just going to shoot through the rest of these. So thank you for listening. Jonathan.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take two questions, and then we'll leave it to Gil. We don't want to take away any of his time. So, any questions for me or for Paul? Yes, please.
Wonderful job on the first two issues.
Thank you. He likes the first two issues. Thank you. Thank you. I just make what I like to read, so I'm glad you like it too. Anybody else? Ah, sorry, sir. Yes.
I like the above first issues. Does it make sense to send in bulk to somebody here in the United States that people could whatever email right from that point?
We looked into that, and no, it doesn't. I can briefly explain why. I contacted several parties, and the first thing they do is, okay, how much are you selling it online for right now? Okay, so I ship the books over there or the magazines, and they're like, okay, if you sell them, they're going to want a markup, and that markup is always going to be exactly the same as what you pay if you order it with me, because they figured people are used to paying that right now, so why would we take less? So it wouldn't change anything other than that they might ship it out more frequently. That's probably the only advantage. The Pinball book is actually for sale at the Pacific Pinball Museum, and they do ship it out also to everywhere in the U.S. And they can do that because the book officially doesn't have any advertisements. So we can qualify for the media rate mail. The magazine does have advertisements, so if they would check that, then I would probably be fined or whatever. I don't know what the rules are over here in the States, but we're still looking into ways of getting the postal cost down. That's basically the main issue, because the magazine is so heavy. So.
Okay. Of course, the other thing is they have major shows.
Yeah. Well, not that we were at California Extreme, and I think we sold the first day like two copies. So. I'm trying to do as much shows as I can, but we sold a bunch of books yesterday at the Stern Tour, which was great, but at the Stand of Mike, it went a lot less slower, but people have a lot more things to look at over there. So, but we'll look at things, and I'd love to visit all the shows. So, if I can, I will bring books and magazines and try to sell them. So, thank you. Anybody else?
With your pipeline use, what percent was non-pinball related?
That's a good question. If he was bitching about other people, I would say that's not pinball related, and that was about 80%. But if you talk about his artwork that he did prior to pinball or other games that he did, I have a lot of artwork. The problem is he didn't talk about that a lot because he loved talking about other people that much, not in the most positive way. So that's another challenge to make sure that, okay, we got all the images, but like World of Clowns that we showed, he never talked about it. I asked him several times, and he never talked about World of Clowns, so we have no idea what his intentions were for that game. I can show you the sketches, and then you have to think of it for yourself, what could it have been? I will try to put in as much pinball stuff and relevant other stuff as well, so at least that you know where he comes from and why he reasons like he does, and what else he did. Just like with Dennis and his dollhouses, which was an issue too, and Roger wrote computer books, which was also in issue one. We don't want to neglect that, so it's going to be in there, but obviously not as prominent as pinball stuff. Thank you. Anybody else? No? Okay. Then I'm going to hand over the stage to Gil. Thank you. Thank you, Paul.